Well, good morning. I'm Brent. I'm the lead pastor here. And you know, as we were singing these songs, which are great songs, and I think they're wonderful, I love to, you know, most of you know my background is music, and I was worship leading for 20 plus years before I did this thing. And, you know, music has always touched me. But I find that sometimes, even as we say the words, there's a challenge. Because as we sing songs like, yes, all the stars will praise you, 100 billion galaxies will, and so will I, and we mouth those words with our lips, but inside we feel the tension and the storm that just kind of rages a little bit there. And maybe it's not because of something we've done, maybe it's because of what's happening around us or to us. And we sing songs like, Great Are You, Lord. But if we're honest, there are times in our lives where we struggle truly understanding the greatness of God, the faithfulness of God, the love and the comfort of God. And honestly, that's why we wanted to do this series that you see up here on the screen called You've Been Lied To. And the subtext of that, or the subheading of that, should say, And We're Sorry About That. Because, you know, as you think about this statement, I'm assuming maybe you, like many people who drove by our church the past couple of weeks, you have an immediate reaction to that expression, you've been lied to. For some of you may think, lied to about what? What are you talking about? For some of you, you may be thinking, you know, what do I have to be sorry about? For some of you, you may be thinking, it's about time. We've been waiting for this from you, this apology to acknowledge some things. It's amazing because we put this out on the road as a banner, and we had more web inquiries and more actual telephone calls. Did you guys know people still use the phone to make telephone calls? I did not. But we had people actually pick up the phone and call and say, what do you mean by that? And of course we said, come Sunday morning and you'll find out. No, this statement itself generates a response, an emotional response. And that's what we want to look at today is, are there messages that maybe we've thrown out there that aren't exactly what line up with Scripture? You know, there have been some pretty famous lies throughout history, contrary to what you may have heard in history class. You know, George Washington did not chop down a cherry tree. You guys know that, right? That did not happen. That's a made-up story. Marie Antoinette did not say, let them eat cake. That was not what she said. And Christopher Columbus did not discover America. He was a few hundred miles away from getting here. And so, but we give these people all this credit. These are like big, big issues that we've been told, and they're really not true. And in the journey of Christianity, when we think about our time and the time since Jesus left the earth, you find that Jesus, or Christians in the church, have looked for ways to be able to live out this faith that we have, to be able to share that faith with others, and to live genuinely, and as Ryan was saying earlier, to live authentically. But sometimes I think in our desire to live that way, to follow Jesus, sometimes our message has gotten twisted or distorted, and good intentions and ideology have replaced love and truth. And over the next several weeks, that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at several things, several ideas, cliches even, beliefs that Christians and the church have put out there. We've believed, we've said that may not be entirely true. And today we begin with what I think is a very well-meaning expression that's often said to people in times of difficulty, but we may not realize that when we say this to people, it's really one of the most unhelpful things that we can say. And it actually does more harm than good. And on top of all that, it isn't in the Bible like we think it is. And if you've ever said or been told or believed that God won't give you more than you can handle, you've been lied to, and we're sorry about that. And so let's dig into this. And by the way, just to say this, this statement, God won't give you more than you can handle, if you're an Iowa State fan, you know this can't be true. Too early? Too early? Too early? Okay, Hawkeye fans, you can amen that. It's all right. It's all right. There you go. You know, this sentiment right here, God won't give you more than you can handle, it does have biblical roots. It isn't something that somebody just put on a Hallmark card at one time and said, oh, this sounds really good. No, there's actually somebody read the Bible, and when they were reading the Bible, they took this thought and said, this must be what this means. And so we find this in the book of 1 Corinthians. And so what I want us to do first is we're just going to look at, where does this come from? How do we get to this idea that God won't give you more than you can handle? So we find 1 Corinthians, and this is a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to a church that he helped establish. And of course, if you read 1 Corinthians, you understand that this church had a lot of problems. They're humans, and they're fighting with one another, and there's difficulty and challenges in what to believe and what to do and what to say. And so Paul writes this letter kind of in response to a letter we don't have, to let them know and to encourage them on how they should live out this faith and, you know, how they should support one another. And in 1 Corinthians 10, 13, we read these words. It says this. It says, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. Now, when we begin to look at this, some translations take that word tempted and replace it with the word tested or testing. So you could read that with some translation would say, no testing has overtaken you. And so you understand that immediately when you have this word that could be translated two different ways, we can kind of see that, okay, no testing has overtaken you except what is common to man, and God will give you a way out. So you can kind of understand that when somebody reads that as tested, you think, oh, I see where they get that idea. I see where they could say, oh, God won't give you more than you can handle. So we kind of understand that, but we have to understand that the Bible was not written in English, that the manuscripts that we have of the New Testament are in Greek, and so those that Greek had to be translated, and if you know two languages, you know sometimes that moving from one language to another, it's not always A equals A and B equals B. Sometimes there has to be a little bit of understanding behind, okay, what do you mean by that in order to understand truly what the author was trying to say. And so you see on the screen, we see temptation or tested, and it's from this Greek word perosmos, and it actually can be translated both ways. That if you look at Scripture and you look at the Bible and you look at text outside the Bible, you understand that that word perosmos is actually translated that way. It's either temptation or testing. So then what do we do to understand exactly how Paul meant to use it in this way? Well, then we have to go to the context. You didn't know you were getting kind of an English-Greek class this morning, did you? But we have to begin to look at the context. And let me just explain this to you in a way that hopefully is easy. If I were to run into a room and tell you, get down, that could mean a lot of different things, right? If I walk into a bank brandishing a gun and I say, get down, you're obviously thinking, this dude's here to rob the bank. If we walk into a 1970s club and I say, get down, that means something totally different, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying? And if we're in the middle of a dodgeball game and I say, get down, that means duck, because if you can duck a wrench, you can duck a ball, right? And so context is everything in trying to understand what the author is saying. So Paul's not saying get down, but he is saying perosmos, which is either tempted or tested. So to understand what Paul is doing here, we begin to look back a little bit in this letter. What did he say right before this? Does that give us any indication of what he was trying to talk about? So in the early part of chapter 10, Paul talks about the Israelites. Now remember, Paul's a Jewish guy. This is his heritage. He's talking about his history as a Jewish man. And he's talking about the Israelites' exodus from Egypt and how when they traveled, God was not pleased with them. And in verse 6 of chapter 10, he says, they set their hearts on evil things. Verse 7 talks about how they went after idols. And verse 8 talks about sexual immorality. And you see, another thing to understand is that when Paul writes this letter to the church in the city of Corinth, Corinth was filled with temples to all kinds of gods. And the worship of these gods included all kinds of crazy rituals, including temple prostitution and so festivals and things. And so Paul is addressing these things. And as he writes to these people, He's writing to a group of people who have left these religions that are devoted to other gods, and we're doing all these pagan festivals and rituals and rites and prostitution and things like that. And so as he's writing to them, we get to verse 12, right before the verse we read today, and Paul says, "So if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall." And that should lead us to ask the question, fall from what? Fall from the calamity in your life, that whole God won't give you more than you can bear? Don't fall from the bad things that happen to you, the things that are outside your control? No. That's not what Paul is talking about at all. He's saying, because he's built this up talking about idolatry and sexual immorality and the things that tempt us to fall away from faith, to fall away from God, he's clearly talking about temptation. He's telling his original readers, don't get sucked back in to that previous way of life. And when you are tempted, when those things allure you and draw you in, he says, God will help you. He will provide you a way out so you won't stumble and fall again and again. And if we take advantage of the escape hatch, we will escape it if we take advantage of what God is providing for us. So what could be seen as tested or tempted appears to be addressing the temptations we face in life and how we can overcome them. So that's a much different meaning, though, than saying God won't give you more than you can handle. Because we all know when we hear that expression or we say that expression, when are we saying it? We're saying it not when somebody has sinned or stumbled and fallen. We say that when life has punched somebody in the gut. There's been a diagnosis. There's been a tragedy. There's been difficulty. There's been something that has happened. And we come alongside those people and we put our arms around them. And in our most loving voice, we say, God won't give you more than you can handle. And really, when we say that, we're talking about the difficulties of life, the challenges of life, those things that often are outside of our control. And it's different than saying, God won't give you more than you can handle. I do want to interject just real quick here, though, that if you've ever said that to somebody or if somebody has ever said this to you, I want to say, let's just sit right here. That person loves you. The person who said it to you did so because they care about you. And they, in that moment, when all of us enter that moment, you know what I'm talking about. When your friend or your relative begins to go through something and you think, I need to say something right here. What do I say? You'd be amazed to know that pastors, even in that moment, go through that and go, I don't have a clue what to say. And unfortunately, we grab whatever Christian platitude we can, and we think, this will be helpful. But unfortunately, even though it may not be said maliciously, and it may be meant to be encouraging, I think when we hear that, it really can be just another gut punch to us. Why do I say that? You see, the reason I think this becomes more helpful or more harmful than helpful is that when you hear this, you feel like you're already starting to drown. You feel like life is already starting to overwhelm you. And when somebody steps in and somebody says to you, don't worry, God won't give you more than you can handle, what's your first thought? I'm supposed to be handling this. But I'm not. So why not? What's wrong with me? Why can't I handle this? If I'm feeling overwhelmed by my life circumstances, it must mean there's a problem with me. Because after all, listen to all the Christians who have said, God will not give you more than you can handle. And obviously I've got more than I can handle. And just basic reality will teach us that life will be overwhelming at times. You will face things, hardships. You will lose your job. You will experience financial hardship. Your spouse will walk out on you. You'll get that medical diagnosis. You will hear the news that knocks the wind completely out of you. And a statement that is supposed to make you feel better really only causes you great guilt. And what happens is that guilt then moves us to a place of self-determinism that says, I'm supposed to be able to handle this, so obviously I'm not trying hard enough. And so we begin to try harder, and the American cliches of, you know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, those things start going through our minds, and we believe them, and so we begin to try harder, and we do more, and we find it's almost like the person who is drowning. The harder we fight, the more we sink. And the more we try to do it on our own, the deeper we get into the mess. And I don't know about you, but sometimes when I try harder to not be overwhelmed, it only makes me more overwhelmed. And we buy into this lie that we must become self-sufficient because we're not supposed to be overwhelmed, because after all, God wouldn't give us more than we could handle. And then we move to this next level. We just begin to bottle everything up. We think we can't share what I'm going through with anyone. After all, what would they think if they heard that I can't handle what God has given me? Do you guys begin to see the issue with a statement like this? Are you there in your life even right now? Are you going through something that is more than you can handle? Are you like the psalmist who wrote in Psalm 88 that says this, I am overwhelmed with troubles and my life draws near to death. I am counted among those who go down to the pit, and I am like one without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. This psalm says, darkness is my only companion. Have you ever felt like that? Maybe you feel like that this morning. The answer for you today is not to come in and hear, don't worry, God will not give you more than you can handle. Because clearly, because of what many of us have faced at different times in our life, we've had more than we can handle. So what do we do with a statement like this? What is the reality of this statement? Well, just to begin to break it down a little bit, we begin with just simply this understanding. And let me just make this statement at the beginning. Your theology of God will determine a great deal about what happens to you when you go through these overwhelming times. What you believe about God will determine how you handle what you're going through. And what do I mean by that? It begins with just this right here. This phrase begins with this statement, God will not give you. And with that is a theological statement that says that everything that happens in your life is because God made it happen. And whether we believe it or not, that is a theological statement. I've got friends that would say that. That would say that's exactly right, that everything you experience is because God gave it to you. The only problem I have with this is I don't think it's biblical, and it's certainly not the picture we find of God in the Bible. You see, what kind of God must you believe in to see him as one who serves up hardships, stacking them on top of your shoulders like Jenga pieces, but stopping right before you are absolutely crushed under the weight? What kind of God is that? As a parent, would you ever do that? Would you ever see, let me see how close to the breaking point I can make Julian. Let me see just how much, how tough he really is. No, we call human services on that father because he's not fit. And I think sometimes we think God is in this business of causing everything to happen in your life, but God is not in the business of making his children suffer. And this is where we have to understand that, yes, bad things happen. It's because we live in a broken world, and it's not because God created it this way. It's because the sin that destroyed God's perfect creation. And I will say, yes, there are times where God allows us to be tested. There are times God does allow things to happen to us, and I don't know how we determine what God says yes and no to. But in this broken world, bad things will happen. But it doesn't mean that God is sitting up there with his giant chessboard going, well, let's just see how Amy will respond to this. And let's see how Brent will respond to that. You see, I believe that to understand the heart of God, it requires us to look at the life of Jesus. Because Jesus was God in the flesh. Jesus revealed to all of us exactly what God is like, the character and the nature of God. And we look and we understand, how did God, Jesus respond to people? How did he interact with others? And two words immediately come to mind: compassion and love. Just because you were going through it doesn't mean God is giving it to you. That's important for us to understand. I think you only need to look at the life of Job to understand this. Job, a godly man, a good life, and the accuser comes to God to say, well, of course he's godly, God. You've given him everything. Look how easy his life is. And one by one, the accuser hits Job, taking away everything but his life. And God allowed it to happen, but it didn't mean God caused it. But here's the other side of this equation. Just because God didn't give it to you doesn't mean that God can't use it. And that's something that requires some trust on our part. It really does. It doesn't mean that God can't use it. You see, there's something miraculous in God's economy that tells us that even though awful, horrible things might happen in this world, God can use those terrible things to accomplish good. I heard somebody put it this way this week. It says, God can force evil to accomplish good. But it goes back to what we believe about God. As I said, God made this world perfect, but in humanity's desire to be like God, we turned our backs on him. And in doing so, our rebellion, our sin, caused this perfect world to be broken. And we are living with the consequences of that now. We live in the brokenness, and God can and will use the brokenness to bring about good. But we also have to remember that we live with hope that one day God will remove this brokenness and God will restore his creation once again to be a place without pain and a place without struggle and sorrow. Not only do I want you to understand that what you're going through, I don't think God did to you, but the second thing is just simply this: you are in good company. You are in good company. You realize that the story of the Bible is story after story of person who was overwhelmed. People who were overwhelmed, had more than they could handle. We could make a huge list of people. Moses, who led the Israelites out of Egypt, was overwhelmed, so much so he had to have his brother's help. Gideon was asked to lead an army and went back three times to ask God to make sure he hadn't misunderstood. The Apostle Paul, who we read earlier, in his next letter to the church at Corinth, listen to what he says to them this time. He says, we are under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. That is what Paul is saying. Is that a man that's saying, but don't worry, God hasn't given me more than I can handle? No, this is a man that in his grief, in his moment of life, he's saying, we are absolutely overwhelmed. But there's one more case in the Bible I want you to understand that also fights against that as well. And it's Jesus himself. Jesus himself was overwhelmed. And we think, oh, well, how's that possible? He was Jesus, God in the flesh. After the Last Supper, Jesus took his disciples to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And when you read through the Gospels in this story, you read that Jesus, he says, he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. He even says in this moment, he says, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. And as Luke records this taking place, it says, and in anguish, his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. You see, even Jesus doesn't buy into the lie that God won't give you more than you can handle, because in the garden, Jesus was overwhelmed to the point of death. And he prayed and he said, God, take this from me. You see, so if Jesus had points in his life where he was overwhelmed, it's okay if you this morning are overwhelmed. It's okay. The other part of this too, I don't think God did it to you. You're in good company, but also beyond that too, the third point is this: you're not alone. You know, you don't have to do it on your own. You can't do it on your own, and you don't have to. And really, you're not supposed to. I looked for the origins of this expression, you know, God won't give you more than you can handle. I couldn't track them down, but it has to be something that Americans created, right? The modern West, that whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you are strong, you can overcome anything mentality. And isn't this exactly the problem? You think you can do it on your own even when you can't. We have bought into this lie that tells us that if we endure something alone, it's better than enduring something together. As if we get bonus points for enduring things by ourselves. You don't. Can I tell you that again? You don't get bonus points just by going through it alone. That's not how this works. There are no bonus points. And you see, when you get to the place of being overwhelmed, the natural reaction is to circle the wagons. It's to shield yourself off, to build that wall and keep everyone out because I don't want anyone to know what I'm going through. I don't want anyone to know what I'm experiencing. And here's the thing. You can't do it on your own, and that's the point. You're not supposed to. When you are experiencing the crushing circumstances of life, don't turn inward. Don't push everyone away. Don't try to go through it alone. Allow what you're going through to turn you towards God, but also to others who are following Jesus. And find the needed support that you need to get through what you are experiencing. The Bible never says you won't have difficulty. It says you will have difficulty, but you will also have help to see you through. There is a God who will walk through that garbage with you, and He's put you in a community of faith to hold you up when you don't think you can carry on anymore. And instead of turning inward and convincing yourself you have to do this on your own, allow whatever you are facing to cause you to admit you might actually need humans in your life and then reach out for help. You see, I think this is one of the huge lies of the accuser, our enemy, is to convince us that you don't need anybody else. It's why the addict continues to push people away when they continue to fall. When others could be there to help, to support and lift them back up, they push those people away. It's why when there are mental health issues in this world, there's a lot of shame that comes with it, and we think, I don't need help. Nobody will understand. I've got to do this on my own. And what you really need is to be able to open ourselves up and to say, I don't got this. I can't handle this. It's too much for me. And there's no shame in that. There's no guilt in that. In the family of God, there is love in that. And there is support in that, and there is acceptance, and there is hope. And there is hope. Because you see, that's the greatest challenge here, is that when life becomes overwhelming, when you're like that psalm that we read earlier that said, darkness is my only companion, you get to that place where you wonder, is there any hope? And when you have others around you, others that can keep you focused on God, reminding you of who He is and helping you through it. When you have zero hope, they are the ones that can give you the hope you need. When you feel crushed, don't feel shame. It's life. Don't keep it private. You've got stuff. I've got stuff. All God's children got stuff. Just don't allow it to isolate you. Allow it to open you up to the support of others, the way it was meant to be. Let me say that again. Allow it to open you up to the support of others, the way it was meant to be. Even though our expression today was meant for good, let me encourage you, drop this one from your list of Christian platitudes. Let's move on beyond this. If you've got it on a magnet on your refrigerator, go pull that off. If you've got it as a Facebook post, go find it and delete it. Let's get rid of it. But let's replace it with something a little more helpful. And this was really good, and I'd love to lie and tell you I created this and I'm this clever, but I didn't. I heard it this week. But I heard a pastor once say, he said, don't say God won't give you more than you can handle. Say, God will help you handle all that you've been given. Wow. Now, isn't that helpful? God will help you handle all that you've been given. You see, there's Psalm 46. Listen to this. God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their suffering. When life is too much, God is there. He is a refuge, a place of safety and security that we can run into. He is our strength when we have no strength left to carry on. He is ever present, always there, totally available. And as I said before, what you believe about God will determine what you do when life overwhelms you. You see, when life is crashing down around you, it's not that God won't give you more than you can handle. It's trust that there is a God who created you and cares for you, and a God who can take the worst that is happening through you and use it to bring about some good. We serve a Savior who walked on this earth, lived in flesh, and he is a sympathetic Savior, one who has experienced what you are going through. He understands. And remember this, the worst thing in your life will not have the final word in your life. There is hope in Jesus. And what he started doing when he came, bringing peace and hope, establishing a new way and restoring all things, he started something that will take us all to a place where all the calamities and all the tragedies and all the difficulties and all the brokenness will be removed. I must be honest, I wish that this sermon could have been, let me give you 3 points to overcoming the difficulty in your life. Here they are, boom, boom, boom. And I could have done that, but then all of you would have walked out and thought, well, that was a waste of my time. Because life is not reduced down to 3 points that you know aren't really helpful. You know, I wish it could have been God won't give you more than you can handle, but we know better. And we also know that life can't be reduced to a cliche. I just want you to remember this morning, you are not alone. You are not alone. I'm going to ask the worship team to go ahead and come up. This morning, I want you to think about your life. And I know if you're in the middle of it, you don't have to even think. You feel it right now. It's like a 20-ton weight on your shoulders. But are you feeling the weight today of life? I want to tell you this morning, don't feel shame. Don't allow what you're going through to put walls up and keep people out. And certainly, don't see what you're experiencing as a reason to walk away from God. Life will be overwhelming, but trust that even when it doesn't feel like it, God is there, an ever-present help to you in your trouble. He is faithful. And then look around. You are not alone. You know, maybe this morning you're here and you're, because of the circumstances of life, you're struggling to see Jesus. Maybe you've never even taken that first step to follow Jesus because life just keeps hitting you and you wonder, how could I follow this Jesus? I want you to hear this morning that Jesus understands what you're going through. And as you go through the difficulties of life, he will carry you through. He will give you the strength to endure. I'm not saying it's not going to be hard and it won't be overwhelming. It absolutely is going to be sometimes. But if you've never taken that step to trust and follow Jesus, I want to encourage you to do that today. There's no magic formula. It's just an acknowledgement. Sometimes when you're drowning, you just need to reach up and you say, I realize, Jesus, I can't do this on my own. I need you. Maybe you're here today and you're just crushed by the weight of life circumstances and you just need help. I'm going to pray, and then after I pray, we're going to sing. And up front here, we're going to have a prayer team ready. And if you want prayer, if you just think I'm overwhelmed and I need help, I'm going to ask you just to step out, come down to the front and meet with our prayer team who is here and ready to pray with you. And we will seek with you that ever-present God for your need.